We are the Airline Pilots Association, and safety is at the heart of everything we do. That's why pilots train extensively as a team, helping to ensure safe travel for millions. Challenges are met with learning and improvement, reinforcing protocols and best practices. Through new technologies, industry-wide collaboration, and the dedication of those on the flight deck, we can keep safety at the forefront of the American airline industry. Learn more at trainedforlife.alpa.org.
Mega Millions just got
more mega, more millions!
Now with a chance to multiply your non-jackpot prize up to 10 times for just $5.
That's huge!
Visit valottery.com/mega! Must be 18 in order to play. Please play responsibly. 888-532-3500.
We are the Airline Pilots Association, and safety is at the heart of everything we do. That's why pilots train extensively as a team, helping to ensure safe travel for millions. Challenges are met with learning and improvement, reinforcing protocols and best practices. Through new technologies, industry-wide collaboration, and the dedication of those on the flight deck, we can keep safety at the forefront of the American airline industry. Learn more at trainedforlife.alpa.org.
What we need is more common sense.
We got to use plain old common sense.
Breaking down the world's nonsense.
About how American common sense will see us through.
With the common sense of Houston.
I'm just pro common sense.
For Houston, from Houston.
Where you talking about common sense?
This is the Jimmy Barrett Show. Brought to you by viewin.com. Now, here's Jimmy Barrett.
It is Friday, and we're getting ready to end the week, and I hope on a very positive note here today. I thought we'd talk, because we talked a little bit about this morning. Let's talk a little bit more about it this afternoon. Quality of life. How is your quality of life? How do you rate your quality of life? Do you have to have a lot of money to have great quality of life? Do you have to have the perfect job to have a great quality of life? Do you have to have a perfect marriage to have great quality of life? Are there little things that you can do that would increase your quality of life? And you haven't really thought to think of some of these things. I saw this list and I thought this was really interesting. That people have made like these little itty bitty minor changes, and all of a sudden their quality of life goes way up. And I guess by quality of life, it means at the end of the day, you're pretty happy. You're pretty happy with who you are and what you do and what your life is like, and you're not miserable or depressed or any of those things. All right, here's some of the things on the list, and then we're going to share some listener thoughts here. But here's a couple things on the list: giving your eyes breaks. If what you do for a living involves you looking at screens, rest your eyes every 30 minutes. Focus on something 20 feet away. Helps with the eye strain. It helps with headaches. It helps with tiredness. It even helps with depression. Here's another one. Replacing a cheap office chair with something that actually offers lumbar support. And that, I actually think that's a pretty good one. Because if you have the kind of job where you are at your desk all day, you know, hunched over a computer, and your lower back is aching. I mean, there are two things I think that you can have that just completely reduce your quality of life. A backache or a headache. If you have somebody who has migraines or chronic headaches, for example, I think, you know, trying to find a way to get rid of those, whatever you have to do to get rid of those, would just immensely help your quality of life. Here's a very philosophical one. Understanding that working with someone smarter than you is a privilege and an opportunity to learn and hone your own skills, and not a threat. And that's for people like me. The younger me, not the current me, the younger me. The younger me was afraid to do things like go on vacation, because I was afraid whoever was going to fill in for me on the radio would be better than I was and would take my job, which is a pretty much an irrational fear when you get right down to it. Because you can't spend your life worrying that whoever's going to replace you temporarily will do a better job than you do. You just do the best job you can and let the rest of it take care of itself. Buying blackout curtains. Well, if you have to nap or sleep during the day, yeah, that'd be a great quality of life issue. Moving out of your hometown. Now, that's interesting to me. My ex-wife refused to move. One of the reasons why she's my ex-wife is in the radio business, you have to get up and move to get ahead. You just have to. most of the time. It's very rare you can begin a career in a city and stay in that city your entire life. You have to be able to move around. So, yeah, and the best thing ever happened to me, I wouldn't be in Texas. If I were still in my hometown, I wouldn't be here in Texas. Quitting a toxic job. Learning that saying it's okay, to say I don't know instead of pretending you know what someone is talking about, because people are excited to share what they know. So it's a simple thing that can lead to a lot of professional and personal growth. Walking every day. End up with better sleep, better move, more energy. And it's really easy to do. Deleting your social media. Yes. Or at least moving it off your phone to a secondary device so it's something you can escape and be more intentional about. That this is an area where I need personal improvement. I spend way too much time on my phone. Starting a band. Clearly nobody's ever heard me sing. Starting a band, at least it's hanging out with your friends on a regular basis. Okay. Buying an automatic nasal rinse kit? Really? Give up folding your underwear. No, I demand to fold my underwear. Folded underwear is better quality of life. It's like saying don't make your bed. I gotta make my bed. I gotta get into crisp sheets. Now here's the question. What did our listeners think? When we asked the question of the day this morning on KTRH on our morning show, Houston's Morning News, what little things, and it could be as little as you wanted it to be, what little thing have you done in the last month, the last year, the last 2 years, the last 5 years, the last 10 years that immediately improved your quality of life?
Quit a toxic AF job last year. The quality of my life is markedly improved. There's no reason to be miserable and dread going to work. You spend most of your life there, so make it with people that aren't toxic.
You know, I think there's toxic people wherever you go. But I do agree that having a job that you look forward to going to, that you enjoy getting up and going to, even if like me you have to get up at 2:15 in the morning to get to it, that makes all the difference in the world. And I've been blessed to have a career, you know, that's been going on for decades, that every day I've enjoyed getting up and doing what I do. What other ideas do we have?
Kitty in the City, a couple of things that have improved the quality of my life. Having flowers all the time, fresh flowers all the time. When I wake up in the morning saying, thank you, God, for giving me another day, giving me another chance to get it right. And trying to adapt the mentality of everything happens for a reason. I get on the road late for whatever reason. Everything happens for a reason.
It does. I agree. No coincidence in life. I really thought she was going to throw a bubble bath in there. As soon as she said the flowers, I'm sure a bubble bath was coming.
Dickie from Daikin. My quality of life has improved once I got a rescue dog. And then a second one. And then a third one. I have four rescue dogs that walk me everywhere I go. They bring nothing but joy and happiness. Have a good day.
Hi, Todd from Sugarland. I quit smoking 6 years ago, and it was the smartest thing I ever did. Anybody out there still smoking needs to quit today.
My name's Laura, and I semi-retired this year, and it has been the best decision I ever made. And I never realized that I had time to do things that I really wanted to do. So I just, I'm very thankful I was able to do that. Bye-bye.
Those are really some good ones, especially the rescue dog thing. Dogs are a pretty amazing thing. I've spent most of my life not having a dog. And the excuse was always, well, you know, you work strange hours, your wife works, who's going to take care of the dog? And at the end of the day, what you find out most of the time is those are just kind of excuses as to, you know, why you don't want to take on the quote-unquote responsibility of a pet. But I got to say, and we've had cats because cats are very easy to take care of, but there's nothing quite like the dog. You know, the cats are kind of aloof, you know, take you or leave you. But the dog, I mean, the difference you can make, it's not just the difference the dog makes in your life. It's the difference that you make in the dog's life. And I really firmly, I'm with Dickie. I really believe in the value of having a dog in your life, and even more so a rescue dog. Because there are thousands and thousands and thousands of dogs in Houston area shelters, some of which will never have a forever home. And they are so grateful. I mean, you've seen, I'm sure, enough videos to see just how grateful the dog is when you decide that you're going to make them a member of your family. And they end up giving back more to you than you could ever hope to give to them. All right, quick little break. Back with more in a moment. Happy Friday. Jimmy Baird Show, AM 950 KPRC.
We are the Airline Pilots Association, and safety is at the heart of everything we do. That's why pilots train extensively as a team, helping to ensure safe travel for millions. Challenges are met with learning and improvement, reinforcing protocols and best practices. Through new technologies, industry-wide collaboration, and the dedication of those on the flight deck, we can keep safety at the forefront of the American airline industry. Learn more at trainedforlife.alpa.org.
So I think yesterday I was talking about it played a little cut of Elon Musk at the cabinet meeting this week, and it kind of sounded like he was saying goodbye. But I'm not so sure. I think he really enjoys this whole Doge thing. He may have to give it up just from the standpoint of he's got a car company to run, he's got a space company to run. He may just have to do that. But clearly he enjoys what he does. He sat down with Jesse Waters, and this was like at 10 o'clock at night. 10 o'clock at night. Who do you know working at 10 o'clock at night, especially working for the government other than the president and maybe his cabinet at 10 o'clock at night, other than military, 10 o'clock at night? So he sits down with Jesse Waters, Elon Musk does, and also his Doge committee. And his Doge committee, they're an interesting bunch. I mean, a lot of really young guys on the committee here. Why? Because they bring the latest technology. And a lot of what's wrong with the government is technology related. And we'll get to that in a second. But first, here's Jesse Waters talking to Elon Musk. And they get started by talking about the Treasury Department and some issues that they found at the Treasury Department. And you want to talk about fraud. One of the biggest fraud scams going on at the Education Department.
A lot of great work in the Treasury this week. One of the crazy things with regards to the Treasury is that when a payment is made, and the computers at the Treasury actually pay about $5 trillion per year, like crazy amounts, there was formerly not a budget code on there. So if a payment was made, you didn't know actually what it was for. It could have been for anything.
Yeah.
There was a $4 billion COVID fund in the Department of Education, and there was no receipts required, so people could just draw down on it. And when people looked into it, this wasn't us, this was before us, they found that money was being used to rent out Caesar's Palace for parties, rent out stadiums, etc. And so the one change that Doge made with Department of Education is we had the simple requirement that if you draw down money, you must first upload a receipt. That was the only change that was made. You must upload your receipt. And upon doing so,
yes,
nobody drew down any money anymore.
Yes, but we didn't say that we'd check the receipt. You could send a fake receipt. You could send a picture of your dog. Anything.
Anything.
Anything. But as soon as we asked for anything at all, suddenly the requests were like, oh, we don't need it anymore. Mm. Huh, that's interesting.
They were renting Caesar's Palace.
Yes, they were like basically partying on the taxpayer money.
Yep, having a big old party. They had $4 billion in COVID funds that were unspent, that they were using for their own personal use, own personal little slush fund. And there was no accountability for it. No receipts were required. And the moment they started asking for receipts, all of a sudden, oh no, we don't need that, that's fine. Because they knew, or they assumed, that the receipts are going to be checked and that the people would see what they were spending the money on, and all hell would break loose. Really, really quite amazing. What they did in this meeting was fun too. They just went around to Doge committee member to Doge committee member, to kind of, you know, see what that individual was working on, what they'd found, what departments they were at. Here, one of those DOGE members talks about the lack of accountability.
One of the extreme examples of non-accountability in some cases is has occurred at some of the small agencies. I think the Inter-American Foundation, IAF, is one of the agencies we visited where you know, they get $50 million a year, congressional money, to give grants. These are things like you know, alpaca farming in Peru.
That's a real example.
Yes, that's the real description. Improving the marketability of peas in Guatemala.
Really?
Fruit jam. And yes.
What? Yeah.
So you might expect, you know, in the private sector, a nonprofit to give, you know, 80 to 90% of their money to grantees. In the case of IAF, that was 58%. So the other half goes towards management, travel. Yeah.
What would you find exactly, I mean, to Ethan's example, is that even if you agreed with supporting alpaca farmers in Peru, well, actually, most of the money never made it out of D.C.
Mm-hmm.
It's going into the pockets of people in the neighborhood.
What percentage?
They didn't even get to Peru.
Right. So what percentage do you think doesn't even get to the destination it's supposed to?
I believe the GAO estimates, so this is not our estimate, I believe it was on the order of only 10 to 15 cents on the dollar actually gets to the end recipient, whether you agree with that cause or not.
10 to 15 cents per dollar actually getting to the recipient. And most of the recipients were things we should not be spending money on to begin with. So again, there's a department with a $50 million budget, which is lining its own pockets and enriching its own members. And not really making a difference in the world in any way, shape, or form. But it is the Department of Government Efficiency. Let's remember that. And the Department of Government Efficiency is not just about finding fraud and rooting that out. It's also about finding, you know, and waste. It's about finding efficiencies. And there's probably nothing in the world any less efficient than the federal government. If for no other reason than the federal government, despite all this money, the trillions of dollars they spend every year, they have not updated their systems. Many of the systems in the federal government go back to the 80s, the 70s, and in some cases, the 1960s. And listen to this story. This story is really quite amazing to me. In order to retire from the federal government, you're a government employee. In order to retire from the federal government, you have to put in a retirement request. And they have all this paperwork, evidently, that has to be filled out. Reams and reams of paperwork. And the process is so slow, it takes 6 months or more just to go through the retirement process. So if you want to retire from your federal government job, you better give them about a 10 month to a year head start the way things were being done. Here is one of those DOGE committee members talking about that. It all starts in a cave where they're keeping all these records for these retired government employees.
I took a golf cart through security down into the side of a mountain and entered daylight left. And I entered this whole space of caverns and roads. And we get to a metal door, and I open it up, and there in front of me is a sea of filing cabinets from the 1960s. And I'm walking around, it's super chilly, smells like paper, and you know, I realize as a mine, it's a great mine. It's secure, it's well-lit, temperature controlled. And so the question we're asking is not, is this a good place to store physical media, which it is. It's amazing for that. The question is, why are we still using paper in 2025? So I brought something to show you of what's inside the mine.
The normal process for retirement can be over 6 months. So once you file your retirement papers, that's why it takes 6 months.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
So these are replica case folders that people use to retire from the government. And so these are all compiled by hand, moved around on carts through the mine. It takes many months to do that. And this one is a single retiree's paper required to leave the government.
is if somebody wants to retire, they can't because it takes 6 months to compile the paper and carry the paper into a mine where it is stored. And also, the calculations are done by hand.
Everything has to be reconciled. In 2025. Reconciled, adjudicated. This is thicker than the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Yeah. And if I had to process this, I would rather do my taxes in the dark than have to go through this.
Yeah.
And so what we're doing is we're bringing this process online with modern software. And I'm excited to share that as of tonight, we have 25 retirees going through an entirely online retirement process in the government for the very first time.
Wow. For the very first time, an entire online process, a digital process for retirement. Now, you know, I haven't heard any figures about how long that's going to take you to do. You know, my guess is a matter of hours versus a matter of, you know, 6-10 months or more. But imagine that. Not that necessarily. By the way, I'm a kind of a believer in paper trails. So there's a part of me that doesn't mind that there's a paper copy of a lot of things that the government does, because you know, if anything, if it's just all digital, I mean, you know, does the government have a secure way to store that information so that can't get hacked into, so that, you know, it doesn't disappear or something? You know, I have my doubts that they have the ability to do that. But you see the difference here. We're going from basically a system that's been in place since the 1960s, where they generate all this paperwork and put it in filing cabinets, miles of filing cabinets in a mountain somewhere, versus, you know, the modern world, 1965 versus 2025. Really quite amazing. All right, big day coming up tomorrow for Governor Abbott. And for the state of Texas, that's when Governor Abbott will be signing the school choice bill. We'll have more on that story coming up next. Jimmy Baird Show here on AM 950 KPRC. Angelus joins us here on AM 950 KPRC and the Jimmy Baird Show. Accuracy in the Media senior advisor in Texas, in town, in Austin, actually, in order to attend the big signing tomorrow. Governor Greg Abbott is signing the school choice bill into law. You're pretty excited about that, aren't you?
Yeah, it's a huge win. It's actually the biggest day one victory for school choice in U.S. history. It allows all families, regardless of income, to apply. And it's enough funding for about 100,000 scholarships in the first year. I expect that more than 100,000 families will apply. So hopefully we can take that demand, that wait list to the lawmakers to pressure them to get rid of the cap as soon as possible, like we've seen in other states.
Well, I think the cap to begin with, I'll get your opinion here, but I think the cap to begin with was probably an appeasement in order to get the bill passed, because the biggest fear, I guess, of all the public school lobbyists in Austin was that somehow this was going to take money away from the public school system. So in order to be able to get it passed, they had to show that the public schools would be funded to what they are funded now, and this money would not have an impact on that. And granted, we have a surplus, but, you know, that this is a billion-dollar investment. So that's a pretty big investment right out of the gate.
Yeah, but not relative to the government-run schools. They spend about $100 billion. They spend over $18,000 per student per year now. And that's about 60% higher than average private school tuition in Texas. So this is a great start, don't get me wrong, but it's we're not done yet. The fight isn't over. And it's not unusual. We've seen this in other states, like in Utah. They had only 5,000 scholarships in the first year. In places like North Carolina, I think they only had like 10,000 scholarships. So it's not unusual. They expand over time, and it becomes easier to pressure the legislature to do the right thing to clear any wait lists once they arise. So we show demand is the next move, and we bust off the cap. Like in states like Arizona and Florida, they have zero cap. In Florida, they have over 500,000 students using school choice scholarships already. So I expect Texas is going to go big as well.
Yeah, I imagine you're right about that. You know, this is kind of a little, well, sort of related, sort of not related. I want to get your thoughts on this, though. I don't know if you saw this or not. Did you see that the number one state for fourth grade readers is now, you ready? Mississippi.
Yeah, they're focusing on reading. I mean, Mississippi. It's a pretty basic thing, right? Louisiana saw gains as well on the nation's report card. So Louisiana also just passed universal school choice. And in their month and a half window that just closed for applications, they had 40,000 people apply for their new school choice initiative, similar to Texas's school choice program. And if you do the math on that, that's about 6% of their school age population in Louisiana. Translate that percentage to Texas, that's about 300,000 or 400,000 kids. So I do expect that you're going to have a lot of families want this school choice program. And it's a good problem to have, because that means families want opportunities, and it means it's more likely that those opportunities are going to be granted.
You know, doesn't this make the best case, Corey DeAngelis, for getting rid of the National Education Department, as if we needed to make more of a case for this? Look, when Mississippi decided that they were going to make their own decisions, they were going to get back to basics, look what happened. They went from, like, they were traditionally, for as long as I can remember, like 49th or 50th of all the states when it came to their education. Now they're number one in fourth grade reading.
That's right. I mean, we should abolish that unconstitutional Department of Education. It was the word education is not in the U.S. Constitution. It's therefore a violation of the 10th Amendment. I'm glad Trump he ran on the issue. He won the parent vote by 9 points after doing so. He also ran on school choice. And by the way, just on Thursday, Trump mentioned that a prayer breakfast that Texas's school choice bill is the ultimate school choice bill. And he was introducing Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. And look, there's a national mandate to abolish the department and expand school choice after a victory like that. Trump also beat Kamala Harris on the issue of education. That's an underreported story. But two separate big national polls found that before Election Day. And for a Republican to beat a Democrat on education, that the tide is turning because families are seeing that the GOP is the parents' party, trusting families to be in the driver's seat to direct the upbringing of their own kids. But look, the Department of Education started in 1979 as a political payoff to the teachers' union by Jimmy Carter. That's all it's ever been. They said it was going to close achievement gaps and improve outcomes. It's done neither of those things. It's just thrown more money at the problem. It's the definition of insanity. It has spent nearly $3 trillion since its inception, and the proof is in the pudding. The outcomes haven't gotten better because of the Department of Education. In some places, they've gotten worse. So it's time to return education to the states, and I'm glad Trump is taking this approach of giving that department death by 1,000 cuts. Families will be better off because of it.
Well, and we also found out through DOGE, thankfully, that the Department of Education was spending billions of dollars at Caesar's Palace and having a big old party. So, and once they had to turn in receipts, that all of a sudden they didn't need the money anymore. Isn't that amazing?
It's insane, and I'm glad they've fired at least half the people already. Oh, we're halfway there. We're not done yet. But he did do that executive order to start the dismantling of the department. And guess what? All of the useful functions, if there are any, would move under other departments. So the left has been fear-mongering, trying to employ Trump derangement syndrome to try to gin up voters to be upset about abolishing the department after they voted for Trump, who ran on the issue. And they're trying to say that special needs programs would go away. That's not even true. I mean, Linda McMahon, Trump, all of the Republicans have been clear that that would move under the Department of Health and Human Services. Things like Head Start would also move there. And the funding would be block granted back to the states. Yeah, you'd actually have more money for education than you had before, because you wouldn't be wasting so much of it on useless bureaucrats thousands of miles away pushing paper in Washington, D.C.
We're talking to Accuracy and Media Senior Advisor Corey DeAngelis. I want to ask you about a couple of Supreme Court cases real quick in the couple of minutes we have left here, Corey. One of them is in Oklahoma, or involves Oklahoma, I should say, and religious schools. Bring us up to date on that.
Yeah, Oklahoma tried to start a religious Catholic charter school, and they initially approved it, but then their state Supreme Court knocked it down because it was religious. And so that went to the Supreme Court yesterday. And it appears that we're going to get a 5-3 ruling. It should be 6-3, but Amy Coney Barrett recused herself from participating in this case because of connections to Notre Dame University. But look, the charter school was blocked because it was religious, not because it because of their academics or anything else. And so that's a violation of the free exercise clause of the First Amendment. It appears it's going to go our way, and that could open the door to religious charter schools all across the country. So that's going to be a big win. The week before, we had another similar case out of Maryland, of all places, about letting families opt out of gender ideology in schools. They don't allow that. They don't allow you to opt out for religious beliefs in Maryland. And it looks like that case is going to go 7-2. Even Kagan had some sympathy for the parents in that case, a liberal justice of the court. And so I think that's going to have far-reaching effects as well in improving parental rights and education all across the country.
You know, it feels, Corey, you know, I tried to temper my optimism with realism, but it feels like we're really turning the corner on some of these things. Do you feel the same way?
Yes, exactly. And the opponents of education freedom, they have the worst arguments. You listen to Justice Jackson, the one who doesn't know what a woman is, on the Supreme Court. He was saying in that opt-out case that, well, if you don't like what your public school is doing, if it conflicts with your deeply held religious beliefs, no biggie. You can just go pay out of pocket for a private school. That's easy for her to say. She sent both of her kids to Georgetown Day School in Washington, D.C., a private school that costs about $60,000 per year, which is about the amount it costs to attend Harvard University. I mean, it was her let them eat cake moment. Her Marie Antoinette moment, and it took free advertising for school choice, but too bad Justice Jackson doesn't actually support school choice for you, only for her own kids.
Amazing. Hey, Corey, good to talk to you as always. Have fun in Austin tomorrow.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
You bet. Take care. That's Accuracy and Menia Senior Advisor Corey DeAngelis. Back with more in a moment. Jimmy Barrett Show here on AM 950 KPRC.
We are the Airline Pilots Association, and safety is at the heart of everything we do. That's why pilots train extensively as a team, helping to ensure safe travel for millions. Challenges are met with learning and improvement, reinforcing protocols and best practices. Through new technologies, industry-wide collaboration, and the dedication of those on the flight deck, we can keep safety at the forefront of the American airline industry. Learn more at trainedforlife.alpa.org.
All right, before we get into the weekend here and wrap it up for today, I'm going to play one of my favorite cuts of the week. I really love... Here's something I'm noticing, is that... a lot of people on the right are fighting back against the mainstream media, and the mainstream media is not fighting back very much anymore. It's kind of like they're tucking their tail between their legs, and I mean, they haven't learned a lesson yet. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I feel like they've learned a life lesson or anything, but I noticed that they're not fighting back as more. And I'll give you an example. You know, these media people on the progressive left have not figured out that they need to drop this El Salvadorian MS gang member / wife beater that was deported from Maryland. They need to drop this guy like a hot potato, because the more we find out about this guy, the worse he is, the more dangerous he is, the more violent he is. There's no reason to bring this guy back. But they still doing the due process, and we have to bring him back. They're still doing that. But I noticed there's a lot less resistance now. When they're finally told, this is what you want to bring back, they don't have an answer for it. They're very quiet. I mean, they keep asking the questions over and over and over again. But people like Stephen Miller, who's one of the president's advisors, is getting tired of answering the question. So he gets asked again about, you know, bringing this guy back and due process and blah, 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 and proceeds to tell the mainstream media this.
With respect to the case that you mentioned, there's not even been more evidence that has been made public of this person's violent, repeated threats and assaults against his spouse, someone who had repeated documented human trafficking and human smuggling offenses. Somebody that has extensively documented membership in MS-13, a terrorist organization, and of course he had MS-13 tattooed on his knuckles. This is a person that was a clear and present danger to the safety of the American people. And it is a sad reflection on the state of our media and many of the outlets represented in this room that you obsessively try to shill for this MS-13 terrorist while no coverage occurred in your papers about any of the Americans that were raped and tortured and murdered by the illegals that Biden was importing into our country. You know, you talk about due process. The Biden administration made the decision to give extensive due process to two Tren de Aragua terrorists that were apprehended at the border just a couple years ago. They were two gentlemen. They were from Venezuela. They were members of Tren de Aragua. The Biden administration and Border Patrol apprehended them and made the decision to provide them with extensive due process, put them onto a program known as supervised release, and put them on ankle monitors so that they could go through a lengthy legal judicial determination as to whether these legal aliens who had just set foot on U.S. soil might want to live in the United States for the rest of their lives. What was the result of that decision? What was the result of that choice that was made? Those two men kidnapped a young girl named Jocelyn Ungary from her family. They beat her, they sexually assaulted her, they tortured her, they stripped her, they murdered her, and they dumped her body. That is what the Biden administration's policy was.
Man, he just gave it right back to them. That was the end of that question. You know, but they don't change. I don't know why they don't change, but they don't change. All right, one more quick story just to mention. I was going to play the audio, but I don't really have time to play the audio. So I will just mention it. Saw a story on our television partner, KPRC2, yesterday about Lululemon. They have like three or four stores in Houston. One of them is in the Heights. And you put the stores all together, and then like in the last 6 months, they have had flash mob shoplifters. Now, if you're not familiar with the term, it means a whole bunch of people show up to shoplift, and they go in and they overwhelm the store and they clear out merchandise and they take off. This has happened 51 times. No, you heard me right. 51 times at Lululemon. Evidently, Lululemon has some very popular clothing. And what they're doing is they're going in and they're stealing the clothing to sell online. Or, you know, I don't know how they're social media, maybe? I don't know. How do you fence stolen merchandise like that? How do you get away with fencing stolen merchandise? And HPD is frustrated because they're constantly getting police calls to go over there. And customers are frustrated because they don't feel, well, would you feel safe? I mean, nothing's happened to the other customers, but would you feel safe if that's going on? You know, you got all these people who are just, a whole bunch of people running in the store and clearing out everything they can. And nobody's getting prosecuted. Nobody's going to jail. Lululemon's not doing anything to stop it. I don't understand two things. First of all, if you've been robbed 51 times in the last 6 months or so, how can you afford to stay in business? When they're getting cleaned out, they had a police incident report that said one time they were cleaned out of $18,000 worth of merchandise. Another time it was over $21,000. How can you take losses like that and stay in business? I mean, is their markup that high? And Lululemon, that they can lose that kind of money and still make money? Why would you continue to operate a store that is constantly hit this way? Why have you told your employees not to do anything about it? Because that's one of the things the customers were talking about. You know, they don't do anything. They act like this is just normal. HPD's frustrated, the customers are frustrated, and Lululemon, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to be bothered all that much by it. That's amazing to me. Anyway, listen, y'all have a great weekend. Thank you for listening. I will see you Monday morning, bright and early at 5 a.m. Hope to see you Monday afternoon at 4 right here on AM 950 KPRC.
We are the Airline Pilots Association, and safety is at the heart of everything we do. That's why pilots train extensively as a team, helping to ensure safe travel for millions. Challenges are met with learning and improvement, reinforcing protocols and best practices. Through new technologies, industry-wide collaboration, and the dedication of those on the flight deck, we can keep safety at the forefront of the American airline industry. Learn more at trainedforlife.alpa.org.
Mega Millions just got
more mega, more millions!
Now with a chance to multiply your non-jackpot prize up to 10 times for just $5.
That's huge!
Visit VALottery.com/mega. Must be 18 in order to play. Please play responsibly. 888-532-3500.